Karen Carmelli is a Palestinian rights activist working with the Albany chapter of Jewish Voice for Peace and the Palestinian Rights Committee. Over the past 4 years, she has helped organize vigils, protests, film screenings, and guest speakers in the capital region, including Iyad Bernat, Bassem Tamimi, Jeff Halper, and Miko Peled. She was raised in Israel and has U.S. and Israeli citizenship. Welcome, Karen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Can you tell us about Jewish Voice for Peace? What is it and what does it stand for? And also, why are you a member?
Sure. Well, Jewish Voice for Peace is a national organization. It was started in the Bay Area in the mid-1990s, and it's since grown over the years and has dozens of chapters across the United States. And the Albany chapter sort of began its formation in late 2013 and early 2014. Jewish Voice for Peace has a couple of points in our mission statement. We seek a foreign policy that's based on promoting peace, democracy, human rights, and respect for international law, an end to the Israeli occupation of the West Bank, the Gaza Strip, and East Jerusalem, a resolution of the Palestinian refugee problem that's consistent with international law and equity, an end to all violence against civilians, and peace among the people of the Middle East. So ultimately, we're just seeking peace in the Middle East, which has been done in a lot of different forms over the years. But we feel that it's particularly important for us as a Jewish organization to show a different side of that. The assumption in the United States is that Jews will be Zionists and they will support Israel, right or wrong. And our position is that our Jewish values teach us to support justice, and we seek justice for Palestinians based off of that. The Albany chapter really, like I said, came into being in late 2013, early 2014, and coalesced around Israel's assault of Gaza in the summer of 2014, which killed about 2,000 people, including around 500 children. So that's what really brought us together. We had regular demonstrations in Dana Park in Albany, and that's how our group sort of took off. And since we've brought in speakers, we've had film screenings, and we've also met with our representatives, try to do that kind of on a regular basis to show them that there are other voices in this equation, and our particular voice as Jews who are concerned for Palestinian justice deserves to be heard.
You raise a really interesting point there about how people often conflate, if you're opposed to the policies of the Israeli government, a lot of people say that's anti-Semitism, and they often confuse the two. And that kind of plays into Trump's announcement last week that the capital, or what we consider the capital, our embassy is, would be moved from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, which, of course, was well supported by the Israeli government, but most other countries and, of course, Palestinians were quite opposed to it. And so what do you think this will entail for the future of Palestinian and Israeli relations?
Right. Well, what I think is really important is that a lot of coverage that's been covering the Donald Trump's announcement only a week ago about recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel and his intent to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem is that it's been phrased as, well, Palestinians see Jerusalem as their future capital, or it's the Palestinian opinion that East Jerusalem will become their capital someday. But that's been the stated U.S. foreign policy for decades. We have been negotiating a quote-unquote peace deal, a two-state solution with Israel and Palestine. It seems to be going on for absolutely ever and not really getting anywhere. But all along, the idea was that Jerusalem would be a future Palestinian capital of a future Palestinian state. So Trump's announcement is really just it's just another embarrassment, I would say. And it really exposes the fact that the U.S.'s position as a sort of honest broker for peace in this region has never really been that. We've allowed settlements to continue to be built the entire time this peace process has been going on. Israel has inflicted more harm on Palestinian civilians, has enforced more restrictions on their movement and their ability to live a normal life. And the U.S. has basically stood by and hasn't done anything about it. But the declaration moving the recognizing Jerusalem as the capital of Israel is really sort of, in my opinion, a sort of the final nail in the coffin of this peace process negotiated by the United States. I would also just like to mention that, you know, East Jerusalem was, or Jerusalem as a whole, in the original 1947 partition plan by the United Nations, was not supposed to belong to either Israel or Palestine. It was going to be this special status international city because they recognized back in 1947 the historical and religious significance of Jerusalem, and that, you know, it was going to be a hot button issue. So even back in 1947, it was left out of the equation and was never assigned to one particular country or the other. Then again, West Jerusalem was occupied in 1948 by Zionist Israeli forces. And then in 1967, after the Six-Day War, East Jerusalem was occupied as well. And Israel has considered it one unified city ever since, even though it is not, and it is a legal definition of an occupied city.
Do you think that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's government can make any sincere efforts towards reconciling this? Or are you of the opinion he's just too conservative and too entrenched in his ways to really make progress at this point?
I don't think that Netanyahu's government has any intention or any interest in really negotiating any kind of peace with Palestinians. If you look not only at him, but at the other people in the Israeli government right now, there are some very, very extreme right-wing members of the Knesset, including Ayelet Shaked, who is the minister for... I'm totally blanking out right now. One of the ministers, Ayelet Shaked, who is on this rampant campaign against the BDS movement, which is the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions movement, which is coming from the international community as a way of supporting the Palestinians and getting them to put pressure economically on Israeli firms that are complicit in the occupation. So... she's trying to shut that down. They have an entire ministry devoted to Hasbara, or explaining the Israeli position. It's basically a PR arm of the government that goes around and explains why Israel behaves the way that it does. It's a sort of a propaganda arm of the government. So, no, Netanyahu is not anyone who should be factored into this at all. What we believe, and JVP endorses the Boycott, Divestment, and Sanction movement, because we see the real potential for success and the real potential for justice in this case coming from the external community. So, for instance, if the U.S. pulls its military support for Israel and stops giving it unlimited amounts of money to buy weapons, that would prevent Israel from being able to continue its occupation. If Israel is no longer able to export its high-tech industry or its vegetables and fruit, that would put pressure on it to change its way and actually negotiate with Palestinians. But right now, they're able to get away with settlement building, wars on a fairly consistent basis, apartheid-like conditions in the West Bank and Gaza. Right now, Gaza is under a complete... blockade. It's been under a blockade for 10 years now, meaning that goods can't come in and people can't go out. And so unless there's external pressure, the Israeli government is not going to change anything.
So really, the BSD movement is sort of a reversal of the blockade that's put on the Palestinians, where the sanctions that affect them would now be applied to Israel, too, not being able to export their goods or receive them.
It's sort of different than that, but yeah, it's an answer to that. The idea would be to obviously, the BDS campaign would never have the military ability to prevent goods and services from coming in, but we can win in the public opinion stage and just highlight, you know, certain organizations or certain companies that are doing business in settlements. For instance, SodaStream was a company that, you know, SodaStream with the seltzer water, you make it at home, and they promoted it as this very environmentally progressive product where you would be, you know, cutting down on your plastic bottles, consumption, etc. Well, the truth is that the SodaStream was headquartered in a settlement, in an illegal settlement. And so there was a lot of external pressure, and it got to the point where SodaStream had to move their headquarters, and they shut down the plant in the settlement and moved it back into what we call Israel proper, or within the 1967 borders. So we do have a number of wins. There are currently campaigns against Caterpillar, HP. These are all companies that their products are being used in occupied territories. So it's ongoing, but there are small successes here and there.
So just to kind of touch back on the Jewish Voice for Peace, there's an upcoming Hanukkah vigil tomorrow on December 14th. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, there is. It's tomorrow. It's our fourth annual Hanukkah vigil, and we're going to be holding it at Townsend Park at 4:30. Townsend Park is at the intersection of Henry Johnson and Central Avenue, so near the Social Justice Center in Albany. It's our fourth annual Hanukkah vigil, and in 2014 we had our first one, and the idea for these Hanukkah vigils is to sort of branch out from our organizing for Palestinian rights and to also link it with other movements that are going on and are particularly relevant at the time. So in 2014 we linked it with the Black Lives Matter movement. Then in 2015, we again linked our Hanukkah vigil with the Black Lives Matter movement and the issue of mass incarceration and police brutality that was particularly associated with the killing of Dante Ivey. And last year, we linked it with the water protectors, its Standing Rock, and Indigenous rights. And this year, our theme is power, political and electrical, to the people of Palestine and Puerto Rico. We know that Puerto Rico has been without electricity, or great portions of Puerto Rico have been without electricity since Hurricane Maria hit it in September, and that Palestinians are receiving very, very limited electricity in Gaza. With the blockade, for instance, some Gazans are getting about 4 hours of electricity per day. And with the winter months coming up, it's going to be cold, it's going to be darker. So we just want to draw attention to that. And Hanukkah, the story of Hanukkah, is all about a small group of Jews, or Maccabees, who their temple was destroyed and by an empire. And they were able to get back to the temple, and they were able to find a little jar of oil that was able to light their menorah for 8 days, even though there was only enough in there to light it for a day. It's a celebration of light, and it's a celebration of a small group of people being able to make a really radical change, which is what JVP tries to do every day. But because it's a celebration of light, we're going to be bringing flashlights, and we're going to have a menorah lighting afterwards. So if you come tomorrow to Townsend Park at 4:30, please bring a flashlight with you.
Okay, and so why does a Jewish group like yours advocate for Palestinian rights, and how do other Jewish groups respond to that?
Well, like I was saying before, I mean, the overall thought in this country is that the Jewish community, though it can be progressive on a lot of different issues, gay rights, women's rights, environment, etc., when it comes to Israel, it's very, very hardline Zionist. And so, and when by Zionist, I mean the political ideology that Jews have a right to live in and be responsible for all of Israel. And our position is that, you know, we're rooted in our Jewish traditions of, you know, seeking justice. And in this case, we sort of see the way that Jews were treated in Europe, I'm speaking for myself now, but I see the Palestinian condition of being stateless and being without rights as similar to the way Jews were in Europe not very long ago, the way my family was in Europe back in the 1930s. And so it's really important for me, and particularly in my case, because I was raised in Israel and I do have Israeli citizenship, I really have a firsthand account of how segregated Israel is. Jews and Palestinians, or Jews and Muslims and Christians, very, very rarely interact. Communities are entirely segregated. The school system is entirely segregated. And so the first interaction that most Israelis get with a Palestinian is once they're enlisted into the IDF or the military at age 18. So the first kind of time you come together is one person in, like, fatigues and carrying, like, an AK-47, and, you know, a person who's trying to get to work or is trying to get through a checkpoint that you might be manning. So it's a really unhealthy situation. And I think it's really made that way by design to keep the groups apart, because if you were to meet each other, if there were to be more, like, you know, if you were to go to school with Palestinians, if I had grown up with Palestinians, you know, there may be more marriages between Israelis and Palestinians. There might be more, you know, commonality. So it's very intentionally segregated, and we look to dismantle that.
And so how do young Israelis who have mandatory military service feel about serving in the occupied territories?
Well, for the most part, it's mandatory service. When you graduate high school, you are enlisted into the Israeli military forces. If you are a man, you're enlisted for 3 years. And if you're a woman, you're enlisted for 2 years. And this could be either a combat sort of role, or it could be secretarial, something in an office, administrative, etc. But regardless, most Israelis are very patriotic, and they are, for the most part, happy to serve their country and to put in their service and participate in the IDF. There are a small number of Israelis who will refuse to enlist in the Israeli military. They're called refuseniks or shministim, and they will officially sign a letter, send a letter to their recruitment office once they graduate high school, notifying them of the intent not to serve. And in those cases, they are put in jail, and they will serve, you know, different sentences depending on who they are and what the circumstances are. But there are a lot of people who refuse for different reasons. There are people who are just pacifists, or people who don't believe in serving the occupation. And so those people will be put into some kind of detention for a certain amount of time. There's also a fantastic group called Breaking the Silence, and they are former soldiers who have served in the occupied territories. And what they do is they tell their stories about what they witnessed in the occupied territories. So they'll go around, they'll tour the United States, and they'll also speak out in Israel about the conditions. And let me tell you, the Israeli population is not exactly happy about what they're hearing from these people, and they feel like they are trying to, you know, assault the state of Israel by sort of airing the dirty laundry. But what they do is very important work, and I encourage everyone to look up Breaking the Silence.
Thank you. So that was Karen Carmelli talking with us about the Jewish Voice for Peace and her activism for Palestinian rights. JVP's upcoming Hanukkah vigil is on Thursday, December 14th. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks.